Blog Talk Radio.
Your host, Jeremy the Impact York, joined once again by Mr. Reggie Walker and, of course, the coach, Haywood Hill. How we doing, guys?
Doing good, Jeremy.
I'm doing excellent, Jim.
That's awesome. That's great to hear. We should be joined a little later by former Falcon and obviously one of our favorite guests, Harper LaBelle, to talk some Falcons and how he's seeing things, because he's, you know, being a former player, he'll have a different look at it than we do even. Today we're going to talk Adrian Peterson, a little Ray Rice, some Carson Palmer, and then as we get into Falcon Zone, we'll review the Tampa Bay game. Devin Hester actually hurt his ankle at one point. We'll have to get into that as well. We debut a new segment called Impact Player of the Week, and we'll give you the full preview for the Atlanta Falcons as they go to the Carolina Panthers later this weekend. I do want to get into our picks first off. I don't have the actual numbers in front of me except for the totals. The games we picked for last week was the Atlanta-Tampa Bay game, obviously with Atlanta getting the best of that one. We also had Dallas at Jacksonville for the London game. That game was very entertaining from all aspects, I believe, with Dallas pulling that one out. Apparently you don't need all your vertebrae to finish a game. Kansas City at Buffalo. Don't have the winner in front of me. I believe Kansas City pulled that one out in the end.
Yeah, they did. They barely pulled it out.
There it is. I found the picks. I'm going to have to fire the stat guy again. I had to find him myself. And then, of course, we picked the Miami at Detroit game, which was quite entertaining as well, with Detroit picking up the victory there. The weekly standings, I was 1-3, but I had a blast watching the games. Reggie, you were 2-2 as you called Dallas and Atlanta. And Coach is actually making some ground on you. He went 4-0 last week. Coach, do you have an acceptance speech for this week?
I will reserve it at the point that I catch Mr. Walker.
Right, because he should be 2-2 because his sleeper picks pulled it out at the end. So I'll give him that.
Hey, Reggie. That's why I coach.
I'm still the Greek, though.
Well,
I agree.
Well, but as we look at the standings right now, you got myself at 16-20. I'm good at being around 500. I'll take that one. Coach, you're actually up to 22-14, and just two games ahead is you, Reggie, with 24-12. So Coach is actually catching you.
Again, like I said, he had the football god shine on him because he was a coach with that Kansas City win and as well as the Detroit win. So, hey, I'll put some more space in between myself and him this week.
I think that's the best you're going to get as far as a pat on the back there, Coach.
Right. No, I give it up. I mean, he stuck with his guns and he called it. He said, I think this is the week I'm going to catch you, so I got to give it up to him.
I say he dang near did. We'll quickly pick this week's games, and we'll start with you, Reggie. We'll start with the New England Patriots going to Indianapolis to take on Andrew Luck and the Colts. Who do you have in that one?
I am going to take Tom Brady and the Patriots. I like the Indianapolis Colts. I think they are definitely a playoff team. And I like what they're doing up there with Andrew Luck, but I just think that Tom Brady and those guys are rolling right now.
All right, Coach, who do you have?
I can't disagree. I think Tom Brady is right in where he needs to be in form to move toward the playoffs. I think Luck is moving in the right direction. I think this game is going to be real close. It's one of those tough games to still try to call. But I think on the road still, when you look at personnel, if some injuries occur, it's no question that the Patriots will still have depth on their end versus the Colts if they lose a couple of players.
You know, I'm going to get with the soundboard operator, and every time we agree on a pick, I think I'm going to get some sort of soundbite, maybe the patriarch of the Simpsons family saying his name, because we're going to homer out on this one. By far, New England is a superior team, even to this juncture. If they met in a couple weeks in a playoff scenario, I may go the other direction, depending on where the game's at. But, yeah, New England's going to win this game. They're just, like you guys said, they're prepared to be a playoff team. They're already in that mode, and they're going to be very hard to stop. Next game on the block is the Detroit Lions at the Arizona Cardinals. Coach, who do you have in this one?
Arizona. I still think that Arizona now are where they need to be. I picked them early as one of those teams. They were actually my sleeper team, if you remember, at the beginning of the season. I think playing them in Arizona is going to make it that much tougher, even though Detroit gets Calvin Johnson back. I think it's going to be hard to whoop the Arizona Cardinals as a whole football team, and that's what they are right now.
Yeah, I have Arizona as well. I think they're one of the few teams, there's a handful of them, that if a key player, even like a quarterback, goes out, the next guy up, you're just looking for a guy to minimize the turnovers and to make good plays, possibly make a great play once or twice a game. Drew Stanton definitely did that, especially at Michigan State. So I think he's going to step in. I hate it for Carson Palmer, who every time he seems to get a big contract, rips his knee in half. Carson, we hope you feel better. Thoughts and condolences to you. And feel free to call in and give us an update on the status and everything. We'd love to have you on. But, yeah, I got Arizona in this one. Reggie, who do you have?
This is one of those tough games for me. I'm actually going to go against you guys. I'm going to go with Detroit on this one. I think Drew Stanton is going to be the difference. I think, you know, you've got that Detroit defense. I think they're going to tee off on Drew Stanton. And I think it's going to be a close game, but I think Detroit's going to pull it out. So I'm going with Detroit.
Yeah, I do agree with a lot of the points you made right there. I was kind of on the fence about the game, but I've been with Coach. We both agreed even before the season, before we even started doing some of these, before we started doing the Super Show, that Arizona's one of those up-and-coming sleeper teams. And I like the Detroit's put it together, but I think the Arizona defense has got too much for them.
I'm with you guys. I mean, with a healthy Carson Palmer, I mean, here it is, that one injury that can derail that team that had the opportunity to win it all. And I just think that, you know, Drew Stanton is he hasn't seen enough yet. And that's what I'm afraid of with going with the Arizona pick is he hasn't seen the full-fledged. And I'll echo a statement that Coach made about Mark Sanchez. I've got to see it for more than one game, and I just think Detroit is – they're meeting Detroit at the wrong time.
Well,
yeah,
I can see your point. I can see your point on that, Reggie. The only reason why I'm choosing Arizona in this is because the difference in Sanchez and the Jets and where Arizona is now is that they don't care how they win, and I think that's the difference in this game maker for them. They know they got Sue coming in. They know they have Detroit's front line that is very tough, but this is where the offense has to prove itself. And no better place. Now, if this game is played in Detroit, I'll probably go the other way with it, to be quite honest with you. But because they're at home, they got a lot to prove, and this is the game that they have to prove it in. So look for this offensive line to really make a statement.
Yeah, definitely so. I definitely think that could be the case. That's going to be a real fun game. I try to pick some good ones. The next one off the block is the Houston Texans and the debut of one Ryan Mallett against the Cleveland Browns. I hate it for Ryan Mallett. He's finally getting a chance to start on a team with a couple decent weapons. Arian Foster can dispel a lot for him, but Brian Hoyer and the Browns have just continued to impress me every week, even if they lose. And I don't think that they're going to lose in Cleveland to the Houston Texans, so I got Cleveland. Coach, who do you have?
I agree with you. I like Cleveland right now. I think, again, they're just hitting on all of their cylinders at the right time. It's a home game for them. Houston comes in. They want to prove that they can keep J.J. Watts out of their backfield and off of their quarterback. So I'm taking Cleveland as well.
All right, Reggie.
Well, this is why I think you need that Homer soundbite, because I'm definitely going Cleveland with this. I like what Cleveland's doing. They find a way out of no way, like you say, even when they lose. And I just think that this is not going to be a close game, I fear.
Yeah, I don't think it is either. And remember, Cleveland's going to get Josh Gordon back in a couple weeks, so that offense is going to get even more dynamic.
Yeah, they get him back against Atlanta, as a matter of fact, here at home.
Well, that'll be fun. We may have to try to cash in some chips and maybe get down there for a high five or something.
Yeah, we'll see. It won't be from him, I think.
Well, you know, Johnny Manziel's arms are starting to fatigue, last I heard, from carrying all those clipboards all the time. So, I mean, he may pass them off to Gordon for a couple weeks.
Yeah. From what I understand, it was an interesting point made by the general manager saying that Josh had to work his way back onto the team. So, you know, again, is he in football shape? Is he really ready to go? I know he's one of the premier wide receivers, but again, you know, I think conditioning and does he know the playbook and is there that chemistry between him and Hoyer still remaining? I think those are going to play big roles. So Atlanta's going to be catching him at the right time, I think.
Yeah, that's true. He may not even play. And that moves us to, since you mentioned Atlanta, that moves us to the last game on the block, as always. Since we'll talk about them for the entire second half of the show, we might as well pick their game. The Atlanta Falcons at the Carolina Panthers. Reggie, we'll start with you.
Well, I mean, I'll be on site at that game, and I definitely think that Atlanta will pull this one out. I'll talk a little bit about in the second half about the interesting event that I attended for Sean Weatherspoon's foundation, where I got a chance to talk to a lot of those players. And the mode of the mindset of the team right now is one game at a time. They're looking to go 1-0. They're not looking ahead. They're not looking behind. They're just looking at that particular game. And just the sense and the confidence of going into Tampa Bay is as wretched as they are and actually winning a road game and getting that off their backs. They displayed a high level of confidence, so I'm going to go with Atlanta on this one.
All right, Coach, who do you have?
I'm most definitely going to take Atlanta. I'm going to take Atlanta just due to personnel. I think that if Carolina had all of their pieces in place, it would be very close and tight as it always is with Atlanta and Carolina. However, I think that their team is just decimated with injuries. I don't think they found an answer yet. I think Cam Newton, as great of a player as he is trying to do way too much. And I think if Atlanta can just keep him on the move and make him throw on the run versus setting his feet and finding receivers, it's going to be a long day for Carolina offensively.
Yeah, and I'll have to look back through the notes. I think this may be only the third or fourth time all year that I've actually picked the Falcons to win their game. But I definitely, and we'll get more into the breakdown of Carolina, especially what we saw on Monday night. That just, I mean, the way they looked then, and like I said, I'll get more into it later, but the way they looked, I mean, Tampa is at least a well-put-together team that's just starting to try to make things click. I think Carolina's going the opposite direction. The wheels are coming off the bus.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that has to do with the health of Cam Newton, as well as the fact that, you know, Kevin Benjamin, while he's a great receiver, I think it's starting to show now why letting Steve Smith go was a mistake on the Carolina organization. And, of course, the fact that they just don't have the Kraken over there on the other side kind of commanding that defensive line. I mean, it's going to be a long road for these guys for the rest of the year, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
I agree.
Sorry,
guys. I think with their backfield being so depleted with players such as Tolbert and some other guys, I think it's just going to be really tough. Injuries are really, really hit them hard. And Cam is nowhere near health. He's not healthy at all. I think he's playing tough. He's being a professional, but I think he's really, really hurt underneath it all.
That's a good point, Coach. I forgot about the fact that their running back situation is just horrible right now.
Yeah, and since you mentioned him, and since we're all fans of him anyway, Mike Tolbert, if you're listening out there, you know, hope the rehab and the rehabilitation's all going well, and would love to hear from you, especially an update on how everything's going, and just, you know, how life is right now. Because I know, especially you said you talked to Mr. Weatherspoon, it's got to be tough watching your team play because you know you could be out there making plays and you just can't physically do it right now.
Right, and that's definitely what he echoed, as well as William Moore actually showed up as well, who's a few weeks away from coming back. I mean, it's really hard, especially on the defensive side, where, you know, those guys are leaders on that side, and they just they see places where they could actually make impacts, but they aren't able to.
Well, and speaking of somebody who could possibly make a very sudden impact, we'll get into Adrian Peterson and the latest on him right now. I don't know what you guys have heard up to this point, but pretty much the way I've gathered, it wouldn't surprise me if in the next couple of weeks I see him in the backfield for the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, the last thing I heard was that the NFLPA basically made a demand that the NFL reinstate him based on his the closure of his case. And some other issues. So yeah, I'm actually hoping so. I was able to secretly grab him on my fantasy league. He was one of those waiver guys, and so I got a lot of feedback from some of the other players that were upset to see the fact that I grabbed him.
Well, I like to add this, guys, if I may. It's a twofold process right now with Adrian Peterson. First of all, I hope that he gets back to the field so he can get back to earning his rightful money under his contract. But he did plead, you know, no contest to, I think it was a misdemeanor, reckless assault. The NFLPA and his group filed a grievance, a non-injury grievance, which allows him to extradite this process. But on top of that, the other part of this is even though the NFL can reinstate him, there are some grumblings internally within the organization that they're not sure, as part of this ownership group, that some of the guys want him back just so quickly. So I think even if he gets reinstated, that part of it gets handled. But then the other part of it is with his ownership with the Minnesota Vikings as well.
That's extremely interesting. I saw some player comments from some of the players that obviously said they would welcome him back with open arms, and I'm just wondering what kind of PR situation they're going to find themselves in as an organization if they don't reinstate him. So it's going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah, it's a very tight line they're having to walk between political correctness and just overall, you know, running an NFL franchise, because if they make the wrong choice, you know, they could basically lose their fan base.
Right, and that's what I was alluding to is, you know, he's been a very popular player in Minnesota for quite some time, and they're going to have to roll the dice on it, but I would think that he's such an impact maker. It would be hard for me to see that Minnesota go the opposite way and not let this guy play.
Well, and from one impactful running back to another, the latest on Ray Rice. To me, I think with Ray Rice, since the way he was let go and the way it's played out that way, I actually think it'll be early next season, possibly even training camp, before we see him back on the field.
Yeah, I agree with that. Coach and I had some conversation about that, and I'll let him share his objective on that. But I just think that, you know, when we do see him, he will definitely be with another team. And I don't think it's going to take a long time for somebody to sign him. He, again, another one of those impact guys that you just can't deny what he brings to the football field, aside from whatever the issues that he's encountered on the disciplinary side. I just think that it won't take long for some team to snatch him up.
I agree, Reginald. I don't think it's going to take long. But in lieu of his pending reinstatement after the hearing, the appeal hearing that he had recently, I would most definitely encourage Mr. Rice to go and do the work. I think that's going to be the biggest part of it. I don't think he sees the field again in 2014, but in that time down, he needs to restore his credibility off the football field. And I think that's going to speak volumes to a lot of the owners as they move, you know, toward the end of the season and begin to look at free agent acquisitions and things of that nature and who they're going to go after. And that is the one dark cloud that's over him right now. What has he done since that incident to regain his credibility and the respect of the community at large? I think that's the question that has to still be answered, that it remains unanswered.
Well, and let's think about it this way. If both these guys are available, I mean, regardless of who your team has, how would you feel, or if would you want your team to want to try to pick up one of these two guys?
I would say absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, either guy, I would probably lean more towards Ray Rice, but that would be more based on the fact that, you know, his age and how much more time he has left and injuries and so forth and so on. But I would not be upset with the Falcons if they ever decide to grab either one of those guys.
I mean, I agree. I think that both of these guys are impact players. Their resumes are proven. They have some issues. They've handled them correctly thus far. And I think now it's just trying to put this behind them and both of those gentlemen getting back to the field of play and doing what they do best, and that's being prolific backs.
Yeah, I've been known to say off podcast and broadcast, but I'll say it on this one. I think it would really surprise me if Ray Rice is not either a Raider or a Jaguar or possibly even a Jet by next year.
Yeah, I could see those teams. I mean, there are just so many teams that he can go to and change the dynamics of their offense from day one. So I definitely could see him being at one of those teams.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be short for suitors. I think there are a lot of suitors out there for Mr. Rice, and I think that he'll have his options. It's just a matter of getting 2014 behind him. Again, like I said, I encourage him. I pray for him and his wife, Janae, and I hope that everything goes well for him. But I think just looking at it from a broader perspective, that's the one thing I think that's hindering him right now.
Well, and for now, the last thing I'll really say on both these guys usually the unofficial final step into getting back in the league or reinstated or being accepted by the NFL community hasn't happened for either of these two, and that's neither one has been visited by Tony Dungy, who seems to be the personality whisperer of all the troubled people in the NFL. So as soon as I hear that Tony Dungy has met and talked with these people, I'll expect to see him in a uniform.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And again, you know, in both situations, that's one of the things I think guys have just got them really hung up right now, is what have they done back into the community at large, or where's the visibility? I guess I can just shorten it by saying, where's the visibility? I would like to see both of those gentlemen get into the community, restore their credibility there, and then go right back to the field of play. I think that's the only thing, in my opinion, that I see as just the hindrance right now. People need to see that.
Well, and since we're on the subject, and we mentioned his team earlier in one of our games we're picking this week, but to transition into another guy who's currently not playing for a completely different reason, Arizona quarterback Carson Palmer. Now, once again, this was a non-contact injury, just like Victor Cruz with the Giants. Carson dropped back, and his knee just buckled on him and tore his ACL. He'll be out the rest of the year. Oddly enough, the second time he's tore his a knee ligament within days of signing a huge contract. It's just bad luck on his part, I believe.
Yeah, and that was the thing that I was thinking about, although I did go back and kind of research the structure of his contract and what's there. I mean, they'll be on the hook for the rest of this year and next year. And
right.
Then after that, you know, it's just kind of all dead money. But that being said, it's extremely unfortunate, especially for that Arizona team that seems to be rolling right now with him behind the helm. I haven't seen him play this way since his early days in Cincinnati. So it's unfortunate. It's one of those injuries that you hate to see with guys like him, or guys in general, but especially with people like him that seem to, you know, get a resurgence in his career.
I agree. I think Carson has done a great job there in Arizona. But again, I think that he still has a very, very strong impression on this team. And I think that all he has to do now, as he's beginning to go through surgery and rehabilitate himself, is to basically let the team know, stay a team. And I think that that's all they're going to need to stand behind their quarterback that's going to step in. I don't think there's any concern in the organization about what the quarterback, the backup quarterback would be able to do. Now the starting quarterback, I think that's already been proven. I think at this point, Arizona, they just don't care. And when you're dealing with a team like that's what makes for a dangerous team, but more important, that's what makes for a championship team. When they do not care, whether it's the punter putting backing somebody up and holding them down to the 3-yard line, or you win on the foot of the field goal kicker, or what a special team play, they're just in that mode, guys, and I've seen this mode before. When you don't care how you win, it's hard to stop a team from winning.
Yeah, I agree with that point, Coach. Again, you know, you're talking about a quarterback who you know, is 80% of the offense. Once teams start stopping the run and putting the ball in Drew Stanton's hands and making him beat him, it's a very different when you got 300-pound linemen putting you on your back every 5 minutes. So we'll see how that happens because I still don't think he's ready right now, but time will tell.
That it definitely will. And just to mention everybody that is listening along with us or following along with us, through our various links and everything. If you do want to be a part of the show, all you have to do is you can call 347-826-7448, and we'll put you right on, try to answer your question or listen to your point. You know, we're not going to – I do have a dump button in case you get a little out of control, but for the most part, no, we'd love to hear from you right now. And like I said, if you want to call 347-826-7448, we'd love to hear from you. Also, you can catch us on Twitter – at 3endzone, at the Impact 99, at ATLN, correct?
That is correct.
There's a number on the end of that. I always forget the number, and I feel bad about that. Isn't that right? Don't you have a number on the end of it?
I'm sorry, ATLN 73.
I always think 83 for some reason, but that would be my birth year. That would not be your Twitter handle. So you can catch us on there, Facebook and everything like that. Moving on to the next order of business, so to say, or the next thing, the fact that the Jets were able to stop the Steelers' winning streak and do it in such a dominating fashion. I don't know if you guys caught any of this game. I had to go back and watch it. I wasn't able to watch it live. But, I mean, the Jets started to look like the Jets back when Rex and Sanchez were first starting with the team. I mean, they just absolutely dominated. Did you guys get a chance to see this game?
Yeah, they did. Mike Vick looked extremely well. That defense, I mean, it was the surprise of the week for me. I didn't expect to see them wallop on Pittsburgh the way that they did. But it was interesting, the post-game comments or post-the-next-day comments. Mike Vick had been pretty much contrite, you know, from day one from signing with the Jets. And he was always kind of pushing Geno Smith to the forefront and putting himself as the backup. But when he was asked, you know, did he think the Jets would have won more games had he been the starter, he quickly said absolutely. So it's going to be interesting. Hopefully he can stay erect. But they definitely look like a different team with him behind the scenes.
Well, that's what experience would do for a football team. If you remember, we had this conversation a couple of shows back, and I said that, you know, Michael Vick most definitely is still the Michael Vick of old, just matured. And that was the sign of that maturity, by taking a young quarterback that was drafted and trying to groom him for his future. But at any given time, I think people still forget that although he was 3 years removed from the game and the speed of the game and some of the dynamics in offense and defensive players changed, Michael Vick, the athlete, his body was not beat up for those 3 years. So all he needed to do is latch to a team that was going to give him an opportunity to start. Philadelphia gave him that. He went to the Jets. But I can tell you now, don't remove Michael Vick at any time as a player that can step in and make things happen. If you remember, I think last year, Charlie Batch did the same thing. He's just, you know, quite the journeyman himself. But when Roethlisberger went down, Batch stepped right in, and Pittsburgh won football games, and all of a sudden, miraculously, Mr. Roethlisberger got healthy. So, again, I was just elated at the fact that Vic was able to hit the field. He commanded the offense. He went out like he played like a starter because he is a starter. And don't be too surprised that, you know, with this, the Jets have something to think about in the offseason.
Well, I don't know if he's going to be a Jet next year as far as that, but he will make him think about a few things. I don't know if him or Geno's around. It depends on how much money they have tied up, as we saw with Sanchez in New York. But, I mean, the final score was 20-13, but this thing was pretty much 20-0 for a long, long time. I remember seeing the score updates, even though I wasn't able to watch it until I went back. But, I mean, I couldn't believe they were shutting down Big Ben, who in the previous 2 weeks had 6 touchdowns a week.
Right, and I think that was what was so surprising about this was, you know that Pittsburgh had the defensive issues, so I wasn't really concerned or surprised that the Jets were able to move the ball, but the fact that they just couldn't score anything was just really surprising to me.
Yeah, and I'll go as far as to say that, you know, again, I think the Jets defense decided that, hey, today is the day that we're going to not embarrass ourselves, and they went out and proved their point.
I mean, if anything, they bought Rex Ryan a ticket at least to the end of the season. So, I mean, you know, kudos on that.
He won't get cut anytime soon, especially as long as they can keep Mike Vick healthy.
And that could be the key to the whole thing. You know, we'll stick on the Steelers because there's a handful of things that involve the Steelers over the week. Some of them funny. That obviously, them getting walloped like that wasn't quite that funny to Steeler Nation. But at the end of the game, as the Jets were lining up for the victory formation, a couple Steelers decided to crash, kind of jump the gun and you know, kind of try this whole, let's make the guy fumble, even though nobody has ever fumbled out of a victory formation. And in the press conference afterwards, people asked Mike Tomlin about it, and he said, I mean, we don't know how much of this is true or not, but he said that I didn't tell those guys to do anything like that. To me, that violates some of the unwritten rules of football about integrity, about respect, and about player safety. So he said, as far as he's concerned, you won't see that happen again from a Pittsburgh Steeler.
Yeah, and again, when I saw that, it took me back to one thought that I had with another friend of mine that's a Steelers fan, in that it seems like Mike Tomlin may have lost control of the team, much like we think we have here in Atlanta. But it also took me back to the game against the Ravens where Jacoby Jones is running up the sideline for an obvious touchdown and Mike Tomlin's standing literally on the field trying to trying to block Jacoby Jones. So, I mean, it could be a little a tunnel into maybe what this guy's really about.
You know, I had not thought that those two could be related, but now that you say that, maybe there is more to Mike Tomlin than we realize.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, and I'm just throwing it out there. I think Mike Tomlin overall is a stand-up guy. But, you know, I never expected to see a Greg Schiano style jumping of
there
the
it is.
Nation, you know.
I was wondering how long it would take to bring up Greg Schiano's name.
Right. I mean, that's where they came from. I'd never seen it before him, so I didn't expect to see it again after him.
Yeah, definitely so. But the third kind of thing that happened in Steeler Nation that I thought was kind of this one was kind of odd. The first part's not odd, and that's that the Steelers apparently have, especially when they're on the road, because this game was in New York, at the hotel they have Saturday night Bible study. No problems with that. You know, any kind of religious stuff, especially the fact that they play on Sundays, a lot of these guys would miss church normally because of playing, so it's good that they're still, you know, trying to keep religion in their lives as well. The thing that was odd to me is that they allowed one Justin Bieber, who happened to be in the area and apparently is a Steelers fan, to join their Bible study, which now brings up to every time Bieber shows up near a team, they seem to lose the next week, and now everybody's calling him a jinx. To me, this was one big distraction for the team. How did you guys see it?
Yeah, when I read the story or heard the story, I was just like, really? I mean, what else? You know, and you're right. I just think it's just one more of those distractions that, you know, they just don't need right now. They were starting to turn the corner and really start to do some things. after kind of getting embarrassed in a couple of games before, and it just seems like this is just one more thing that they just don't need in their corner right now.
I agree. I don't, you know, the NFL has a lot of moving parts, and, you know, again, allowing players to participate and or practice their religious freedoms is a great piece of that. However, I think the whole thing of basically having Justin Bieber, the picture, I mean, I don't think it was a problem. I mean, he's in New York, and, I mean, you're going to see celebrities in New York like he's fine in Atlanta. But I think it was a little bit extra, in my opinion, for the picture to come out or to get leaked out as it pertains to that. I mean, go to the Bible study, quietly do your worship, have your private conversation. I think that that's what was basically taken from that, in my opinion.
Okay, well, let me pose this in two different directions to you guys. First, you, Reggie. I know you've went out of town before to see a lot of Falcons games and other events. Do you ever see a lot of celebrities out while you're out of town to watching these?
Yeah, I do. Most of the time, those guys are around, and it just depends. I mean, Heinz Field is obviously one of those places that I've gone and seen. If it's a smaller market, you don't really get to see it that much. But, yeah, you actually do, very quietly.
All right, and then I'll pose it to you this way, Coach. In your career as a coach, being on the road for these games, how often do you have celebrities, even D-list celebrities, approaching the team or trying to somehow hang out in the same area as you are?
Well, you do. I think a lot of times what people tend to forget is that they're A, human beings, and B, they're fans. So it gives them an opportunity to try to take a little bit away from, you know, not necessarily their celebrityism, but just be human for a moment. So it's not uncommon to have celebrities to come through and wish you luck, or if this is their favorite team because they're a fan of that team, to stop by and give words of encouragement. You know, I've seen situations where they even get allowed in the locker room. And if you remember, there was a situation where I think LeBron James wanted to go in, and I think it was some things that were going on with that, but he wanted to actually go into the locker room. And I think Drake, the rapper Drake, did the same thing, and there were some situations with that. But, again, it's not uncommon to see celebrities from different facets of entertainment or the sports world to stop by and give a word of encouragement or just to hang out for a moment. But, again, we're living in a time where you have a lot of social media, a lot of camera phones, a lot of things that take place, and sometimes it can be a distraction when that becomes more of the center point than what is actually taking place at that time.
Yeah, I can remember a couple years ago, it was back during Masters Week, but a friend of mine won some Hawks tickets. They practically still give those away as well now. But we saw Jervis, who was on Survivor back one of the early seasons, and we also saw Tiger Woods sitting courtside. It just kind of shows you how slow of a week it was that was the best thing he could do. But, yeah, it's especially living here in Atlanta, we get to see them in and out all the time because of the way the airport is, and this is kind of the layover city a lot of times between these guys going from, you know, Miami to New York or just going cross-country with flights.
Yeah, especially in the dome. I during the playoffs, you saw a lot of people show up to the games. And again, this Atlanta is one of those cities where a lot of these athletes live during the off season, so it's not uncommon to see those guys show up at some of these events.
You know, that being said, I believe Terrell Owens still has his house not far from Atlanta. So if he would want to drop by the show or come hang out with us at some of the tailgates or games, he's more than welcome to.
Yeah, he does actually still have a house not too far from me, actually. So, yeah, he still lives here in the off season, or in the summer months he lives here. Most of the time he's out in L.A.
Well, one thing I'd like to also add too, guys, is what makes Atlanta so attractive. When you go to other cities, Green Bay, some of the smaller markets, Jacksonville, you know, the players are a very big part of your community as far as the celebrities are concerned. When you come to Atlanta, the reason why Atlanta became so attractive, and if you notice over the last 10, 15 years, it's become the mecca of, you know, movie industry and a lot of things, because one thing that they can do here, and I've actually, you know, talked to some A-listers and some other, you know, sports personalities, they like Atlanta because they can come here and be themselves, because there's so many celebrities here, they can have somewhere a semi-normal life. So it's nothing to walk the streets of Atlanta or be in an eatery or at a play at the Fox Theater and see these celebrities just walking around mingling with what is considered just regular people, because, again, there's so many celebrities that live here now and have residencies here now that they can just come from wherever they're from and just simply be a little bit. And I think that's the one thing that attracts them to Atlanta.
Right, and that's an interesting point, Coach. And I'll talk a little bit more about that, hopefully, in my segment about, you know, with Sean's event. And that was kind of one of the things that we echoed with a lot of those players is, you know, they like doing these types of events, and it's easy for them to do it because living here in Atlanta, you're right, they just don't get the pressure that they get going other places. They can really just kind of let their hair down and be themselves in a lot of cases.
And also the one thing I like to add to that as well is that if you are coming to Atlanta, if you're coming to Atlanta, Georgia, to make it a, you know, at least having a residency here or making it your permanent home, the one thing about being a celebrity here is that if you are kind of, you know, stuck up and not friendly or user-friendly, if you will, Atlanta just turns you off. So, you know, I think that's also the other part of it. Like you said, the pressure's not on them to have to be this person all the time. They can just kind of be, and Atlanta gives them that opportunity to do so.
Yeah, it definitely does. Atlanta's not only emerged as the next, I don't know if it's the next, but, you know, there's always been New York and L.A. and Miami, Chicago, those kind of places. But Atlanta's very much a great landing spot, not just because of the great weather, but there's so much going on in the entertainment fields, the sports, the movies, the music, just art in general. It's quite a melting pot of a city, and there's always something going on.
Yeah, unfortunately, the transient fans makes it difficult, I'm sure, for these players to come here and get the full support behind playing in a city where it's just that one team. So, unfortunately, that's our curse here.
Yeah, that it is. And a few quick notes before we get out of here on end zone and move into Falcon zone. I don't know if you guys saw where the Seahawks mascot flew into the crowd, landed on a guy's head. The guy was real calm about it. The bird actually flew to the next seat in front of him as well. Everybody was taking pictures with the bird and petting the bird, and he kind of become kind of a fuzzy mascot at that point.
I did get an opportunity to see that, Jeremy, and I found it to be quite entertaining. I most definitely have to tip my hat to the fan and how calm and collected he was. With something like that taking place, but more importantly, it just added that much more excitement to what happens in Seattle.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to see it, but I'm going to have to go back and take a look at the highlights. A buddy of mine who lives in Seattle and a big Seattle fan, obviously, made some mention about it, so I got to go check that out.
Yeah, I would probably be a lot like that fan, and I know it's easy to say because I'm not sitting there with it happening to me, but just in my experience in life, I've come across all kinds of different wildlife and stuff like that. In fact, saw about a 3.5-4 foot python inside a lady's house earlier today. I'm kind of one of those Steve Irwin types. I won't necessarily jump down on it and start like, "Whoa, this is really cool." I'm usually the one that takes the pictures and keeps people back, and you just got to respect nature and you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, I'll certainly remember that, Jeremy, when I see another snake out here in my neighborhood, because I don't do snakes. I can do some of everything else, but snakes, I kind of leave them and let them have their space. So I commend you on that.
Oh, I didn't reach down and pick him up, but we were able to get him into a bucket and relocate him when the previous owner in this particular house didn't want to come back and get him. We passed him on to a pet store that rehabilitates animals, stuff like that, because he was clearly a pet.
Well, that's a good thing. Again, clearly, at the point of we were able to get him in a bucket, that would have never been Reggie.
You know what, Reggie? I have to agree with you. I Snakes are something that I don't do, but as long as I can see anything, I think I'm okay if I'm at a safe distance. It's always that element of surprise that seems to get me.
And real quickly, since I'll move on to things you guys may want to deal with, even though, Reggie, your Falcons will be dealing with this very shortly. Clay Matthews has seemed to return from out of nowhere to being the dominating person he was, even coming out of USC. And to me, it all has to do with, I got to find the guy's name, Dom Capers, kind of lining him up the way, like this new style of defense is where you take 10 players and you call a play and those 10 players do that. And then you take your number one defensive player on the field and you line him up all over the place and give the offense just as many different looks as possible. In doing that, Clay Matthews has suddenly become the beast again.
Yeah, I noticed that when they lined him up or seemed to line him up in more of a – and I'll let Coach I'm on the defensive side speak more about it, but he seemed to line up more in a linebacker as a linebacker than he did on the end. So, yeah, it was interesting to see him flying all over the field again.
Yeah, one of the things that you see now, and as a defensive coordinator, remember this is no more than just playing human chess. When a player is designated to one side of the field, i.e. a defensive end, a middle linebacker, a defensive tackle, what have you, you tend to predicate your blocking scheme to control that side of the field. But once the player begins to move around or you're shifting linemen around, it's a lot harder for the offense then to pick it up. So now you have to check into different calls. You have to change your protection. Remember, you're on a running clock at that time as well, so it makes it very, very difficult, and I think that you're going to see this trend pick up more so here in the second half of the season and more especially as you move toward the playoffs, because at that point, you have to now make sure that you have personnel on both sides of the ball and on both sides of the ball that will allow for you to be able to do so, and that's to pick up that player no matter where they are on the field.
Yeah, definitely so, and hopefully Atlanta can find a way to stop him. If not, then we'll get to see that celebration probably a lot more times than we'd actually want to. But that's going to do it for the end zone portion of today. Here in a few short minutes, we do have Harper LaBelle on the line, one of our favorite guests and a former Falcon, 92.9 The Game, weekend guy, and just I think he's probably busier than most people believe. He is all over the place, kind of the Ryan Seacrest of Atlanta. But for the coach, Haywood Hill, and Mr. Reggie Walker, this has been End Zone. We'll be right back here in a few short minutes with the Falcon Zone segment. Jeremy, the Impact York from End Zone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with End Zone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business. Welcome to the Falcon Zone. I am your host, Jeremy the Impact York, joined once again by Mr. Reggie Walker and the coach, Haywood Hill. How we doing, guys?
Doing good, Jeremy.
Great, Jeremy.
As I said, here in a few short minutes, we do have our one of our favorite guests coming on. A few things we will hit in Falcon Zone. We're going to talk about the Devin Hester injury. We're going to have a new segment, the Impact Player of the Week. And we'll kind of dive a little deeper into a review of the Panthers and try to give everybody a better perspective as to what Atlanta's walking into when they go into Carolina. But as I said, right now I do want to bring on one of our favorite guests by far, for sure. Former Atlanta Falcon. He is on 92.9 The Game here in Atlanta on the weekends. He does some commentating for the Georgia State collegiate football team, who is having an interesting year. And just want to welcome on Harper LaBelle right now.
Jeremy, Coach, Reggie, how are you guys?
Doing good, Mr. LaBelle. How are you doing?
Wonderful, thank you. A little chilly here tonight, little on the cold side of wind chills below 29 right now. So hopefully we can heat it up a little bit.
Absolutely. I definitely got my fireplace going tonight.
I was about to say, that is part of why we started moving shows inside. But, Harper, I tried to get into a lot of the stuff you do right now. How's life been going?
Well, it's a busy time of the year, I guess, for anyone involved with football. Gosh, you've got collegiately all these great things that are happening. It seems like every week there's a pinnacle game that may affect what's going to go on for the playoff and how the bowl games are going to be situated. And then you got, obviously, with the pro game, and here locally, the Falcons finally started to dig themselves out of the hole they got into after losing five in a row. So it's good to see them back on the winning side, and hopefully they can continue that, get a win on Sunday, and get themselves right back in the playoff picture.
Yes, absolutely so. And before we get into some Falcon stuff, I did want to get into, because on one of the other Impact Media shows during the week, actually on the SEC show, there is now a segment on it that talks about the Georgia State Panthers. Did I get that right?
Yes.
I thought so. I was making sure I didn't get them messed up, because I was talking to a couple other colleges the other day about something. But, you know, what's been your take so far of the Georgia State season?
Well, they had a couple of games they absolutely could have won. Lead late in the fourth quarter, or get the ball back and a chance to score, get a field goal or a touchdown to go ahead in really four of the ball games that they've had this year. They won the first game, and optimism was high, and they lose to New Mexico State, which a lot of folks would say, how on earth did you do that? And that's one of those ones. We had the lead. New Mexico State scores with 15 seconds left to go. And a lot of times you got a situation where you give everything that you have, and Coach, you can understand this, you give everything that you have and you come up short. And you go out the next week, give everything that you have and you come out short. You tend to pull back a little bit. There's a healing process within the guy that, you know, you're so close to getting that gold ring, whatever that ring is, and it could be a win. It could be your bride on the other end. And if someone says no, or if you don't succeed, then sometimes you're a little more tentative the next time. So they've been dealing with that a little bit, and losing streak isn't good for anybody, but hopefully they'll be able to turn some things around and get some players that can come in and play right away. There's a real need right now, a lack of skill position guys and some big bodies that you would have in a new program. And they've been struggling a little bit with that, but hopefully they get it turned around here sometime in the near future.
Yeah, Mr. LaBelle, I was paying attention to them a lot, you know, since you're a big part of this show on quite regularly. So I really started paying attention to Georgia State's football. And looking at that Air Force game, you mentioned that New Mexico State game. It's like you said, that Air Force game was one of those games. Louisiana Lafayette was one of those games, where they were just there, almost on the edge. And then now it just seems like, you know, like you mentioned, their psyche has kind of dropped. I was really disappointed with the Appalachian State game, and it just seems like, you know, they've kind of cashed it in a little bit. So I'm with you. I'm hoping to see these guys pick it up a little bit. I know you guys got a tough game coming up at Clemson, so I wanted to get your thoughts about how you guys can possibly prepare for that game.
Well, when the schedule was made, and a couple of years ago when it became available, it seemed like a real good fit. Regardless of how Clemson plays or the success that the football team has had, let's be candid, that's one of those money games, and it's close. You know, they went to Washington earlier in the year, and we didn't get home till 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. So this is one you can be home, the coaches and the players. You could get some alumni and some kids at in the band, and you know the local support should be there for that in the future. But you know, you're going against a team that's in the top 20 right now, and I've watched Deshaun Watson for 4 years at Gainesville High School, and this kid's amazing. And they've got a great program. Let's not kid ourselves. Injuries and just, you know, skill level. There's just not the same competition that Georgia State has compared to an ACC school. So it's going to be tough. But I appreciate you watching. And you know as anyone else, having the right talent, the right people on the field, and being able to play together is one of the keys. But the thing about it for me that I absolutely love, and Jeremy, I know you asked a little bit about it earlier, but you know, I start by saying how much it means to me because of my high school experience and getting to go to college. When you've got a Georgia State program, Kennesaw, now Mercer, Georgia Southern, West Georgia, you throw any school out there and it gives a kid a chance to play. And there's just more opportunities now. So that's the big thing that I relish more than anything else, is that there's more kids that are getting a chance to play here locally in the state of Georgia.
Absolutely. Right. Sorry, go ahead, Reggie.
No, I was just going to mention that to that fact that, you know, we talked about this on another show about how there's so much parity across the colleges now. No longer are there the big D1 schools that, you know, kind of isolating and grabbing all the talent. It's those second-tier guys that come in with chips on their shoulders and end up being, you know, the Brent Grimes of the world that come out of, you know, whatever college it was, shipped something state, and he comes in and he's now this all-pro cornerback. So hopefully you guys can start picking up some of those players, because Georgia has a lot of local talent that's actually very good.
You're absolutely right. That's one of the main focuses on keeping kids local. When we first started the program 5 years ago, not that I'm in the office, but, you know, I'm paying attention to what's going on. I'm not in the athletic department or on the coaching staff, but watching, they got a lot of kids from Florida, a few from Georgia initially, a couple from out of state, one was from Texas, and now we're getting a little more local, and you have the ability to do that. The biggest obstacle that I see right now is that when kids grow up, when they're 5, when they're 8, when they're 14, when they're 17 years old, what do they think of? UGA. They think of Tech. They think of Bama. They're thinking maybe some kids have seen a school from the Pac-12 or maybe the Big Ten or something their whole life. They haven't seen Georgia State. They just haven't. So getting a chance to get into that picture and be a part of the recruiting process is, again, it's something that you have to overcome. But, again, hopefully here in the next couple years, the program will get better. The coaches are doing everything they can right now to try to develop these young guys that are 2- and 3-star kids to play at a 4-star level. It's not easy to do.
Right. So on my last little thing, Coach Hill, I'll ask that you reach out to Snotty over at Tech and my alum and see if maybe we can't put a little hurting on these guys before you guys get to see them next week and soften them up a little bit.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, definitely so. And Georgia State, to me, is building a great program, and they're doing it the right way. They are relatively young still. I believe this week on the SEC show I called them the Vanderbilt of the Sun Belt, I think, and in the fact that Vanderbilt's kind of went back to their roots and started building their program the right way. But we definitely wish GSU all the best, and I should actually be at the last home game coming up right after. It's right on the other side of Thanksgiving, I believe. So definitely come out and support the Panthers. Like you said, keep them in state.
Yeah, that Texas State game, that's one earlier in the year. I'm thinking, hey, we got a great chance to win 3, 4, maybe 5 ball games, depending on how well we play. Coach, you've seen a few mistakes made, obviously. There's been some turnovers and penalties in key situations. But earlier in the year, I'm thinking, hey, we can beat these guys. And hopefully, at the end of the year, with nothing really to lose, they go out and they play better and get a win on their last game. That would certainly build momentum for the offseason.
Right. I agree with you, Mr. Bell. I think that's one of the biggest things. One of the things I think that kind of puts Georgia State in the midst of all of this, too, is you have a lot of young kids in, you know, Atlanta. And, you know, even for the Falcons, you know, sometimes a city can sometimes be a distraction. So it's just, they're right there on the cusp, and I think next year is going to be a better year for them. I think they just need to try to finish out this year, you know, as strong as possible, but more importantly, try to just win. And I think that's going to lead to the recruiting, because one thing I find interesting in the state of Georgia right now, and you brought it up earlier when you started speaking of this, is that you have a lot of other programs now entering into the picture, and whereas West Georgia, let's just take West Georgia for instance, they did a lot of recruiting outside of the state. They did not have a lot of local talent. That is beginning to change for them. So the dynamics of a lot of these players staying home now and playing closer to home is starting to make a difference in what you see as well.
Well, Coach Hill, to that point, and that was what I was going to say, Ms. LaBelle, too, that I think that Georgia State as a university has done very well, is that they have expanded the landscape of the university. I mean, there was a time where you knew Georgia State was downtown, but you didn't really know they were downtown. And now they're starting to build and expand that university throughout the city. And I think that my son is a junior at West Georgia, and it's the same thing. You know, I remember my best friend went there as a state college of West Georgia. Now it's West Georgia University. It's expanded. It's a different university from a physical perspective. And I think that's going to help Georgia State going forward as far as that being recognized by these younger kids.
I agree, and it's not going to be an overnight process, but the fact that they've started, West Georgia has done it, and Mercer and Kennesaw, everybody that's building a program from the beginning or trying to grow it from a smaller to a bigger has that type of challenge. But you just Georgia, let's just say. You got 90 kids, do the math. That 22, maybe 23 or 24, depending on average, scholarships. Well, you got 400 schools, high schools in Georgia, more than that, 4 1/4, I think. And so not everybody's going to get to go to UGA. And they're going to bring in a couple guys like Todd Gurley from North Carolina. So the amount of kids that get to go local to the big school are very, very minimal. And that doesn't mean that there are not going to be some great kids that go to UGA or Tech. And you know Bama's going to take a few, and Florida State's grabbing some now, and Tennessee's always recruited down here, and so is South Carolina. But eventually you're going to get to the point where you got some pretty good kids that have a chance to stay here local, and that's exactly what we were referring to. And the better that Mercer and Kennesaw, West Georgia, and State especially get, it's just a matter of time before they're going to really get some great kids, hardworking guys, local, and having a tremendous impact on the football nation, if you will. Georgia's there. They're legitimate. You get Texas, you got California, you got Florida, very legitimate recruiting areas. And Georgia, the entire state, including South and Valdosta, and you look at what Colquitt County is going to do this year, they'll probably send 10 kids to college next year. Great talent down here, and it's only getting better.
And we are speaking with Harper LaBelle, former Falcon, current GSU commentator, and on the weekends on 92.9, always doing a stand-up, awesome job there. Kind of changing gears, what's been your take on the Falcons up to this point? I know you mentioned that they were able to finally stop the losing streak and pick up a victory. Where do you kind of see them going to finish out this year?
Well, they got 7. They beat the Panthers, and they put themselves right in position to get to fight for the division. New Orleans obviously is getting better. I think they started with only one leg kicking out of the gate, but it seems like they've hit their stride. So that, you know, they're always going to be a challenge. But 2 games against the Panthers, correct me if I'm wrong, you've got Arizona, Green Bay, obviously New Orleans, and then you've got the 2 AFC games against Cleveland and Pittsburgh. Are you kidding? That's a heck of a schedule right there. So what they've already been through, there's some tough losses, New York especially. I thought they had a chance to win that ball game. And then you go to Baltimore and what happened in Minnesota and a few other things. We just got to forget that. It didn't happen. Be like a relief pitcher. You give up a big home run, who cares? Let's just get this next guy out and we win the ball game. If they have that type of mentality, they sure have a chance. It's not going to be easy at all, but I think the great thing that I saw from this past weekend was the cohesiveness of the defense. They played better. Maybe it's just the scheme, a week off, maybe a combination of what the coaches are trying to get done, but they put a lot of pressure. They forced 3 turnovers, and you get that type of mentality and that productivity, you got a chance.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point you brought up. I was talking with Jeremy and Coach Hill a little bit earlier I got a chance to go and patronize the second annual Spoonful of Hope event that Sean Weatherspoon throws. This was the second year that he had done it. So you get a chance to kind of mingle with the players. They actually serve the fans dinner and things of that nature. So you get a chance to get some one-on-one time with a lot of these guys. And what was interesting and what was the highlight of all of this, and you mentioned the mindset. The mindset of these guys now is not, we're not looking behind us. We're not looking ahead of us. Every week we're looking to go 1-0. And so they've changed the psyche. And it was interesting that even as we were going through the event, it was the night that Carolina got demolished by Philadelphia. And they were all very tuned into that game and obviously pulling for Philadelphia. So they are now getting into this mindset where they realize how close they are and that they still have a chance to turn this thing around and steal the division. They know that they're 3-0 in the division. And so this big game, I think Sunday is going to tell the tale. I think if they can go in and do to Carolina what they expect to do to Carolina, at least speaking with them, I think we're definitely going to see something we haven't seen in football in quite some time. So I know we mentioned the Pittsburgh game and they've got Cleveland, but those guys are at home, even Arizona, who's going to be obviously tough games. But when you see the psyche has now changed. I mean, they're now definitely playing for that 1-0 spirit. So it's going to be an interesting run for the rest of the year.
Yeah,
it's
Please
go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'd like to also add to that, if you guys don't mind. I think that they had probably one of the toughest schedules, if not the toughest schedule, in the NFL this year when you look at it across the board. But I think the second half of the season now, the way the schedule is lined up, it is perfect for them to go right into the playoffs. All they have to do now is just go out with that mentality, just one game at a time, one win at a time, and when you look up, you're right there. So I think that the schedule also is going to play a huge role in how they keep this mentality, because now that's what they're actually up against, one game at a time.
Yeah, and watching the Tampa Bay game this weekend, I was able to rewatch it earlier as well to kind of rewind some things. There's a couple issues I still have with the development of certain things, but one in particular, Harper, I think you could actually help them out with, and that's the development of Levine Toilolo as the starting tight end there. I don't know if they've reached out to you or not, and you don't even have to tell us if they have, but if they were to bring you in to work with this kid, what kind of advice or what kind of things would you have him working on to get better?
That's a great question, because without knowing him at all or what he's dealing with, you remember Chuck Knobloch, the second baseman for the New York Yankees, that at one point in his career couldn't throw a ball from second base to first without it going into the stands. A lot of that, to me, the mental aspect of that, he's been throwing a ball since he was probably 5 or 6 years old, and he got a really nice contract, and then he's in New York, and for some reason, something snapped inside his brain, the stuff that says, hey, this is an easy throw, you've been able to do it your whole life, and he got out of sorts, and it ended up ruining his career. I'm not saying Toilolo has that same issue, but a lot of times you get in the position, you sit behind Tony Gonzalez for 2-3 years, even if it's two or three weeks, and then now you're the guy, and you may not be mentally ready for it. You tell everybody you are, and you can't wait to get paid better. You know that you want to get some time to do what you're capable of doing, but then you put that little pressure on yourself when you get there, and you sometimes you just don't know how to react. I think if nothing else, Tony used to catch 100 balls against a jug machine every day. That has to be part of his regimen, because it doesn't appear that he's comfortable catching balls that are hitting him right between his fingers. And that, to me, is, again, a mental situation, and he just has to overcome that by getting some extra reps and maybe have a guy, a linebacker or a safety, come over and, okay, I'm going to catch it, and as soon as I do, I want you to take your hand and try to tear the ball away from me. Just little things that can help and assist him. He's a very good blocker. He has no problems doing that. It's just when he gets open and he is the go-to guy for some reason that I can't certainly detect right away, there's a little switch that seems to a little fear factor that comes in. You guys, you may think I'm all wet and wrong, but that's my first intake because I've seen him. He's got great talent. I just don't know why he's not making those big plays.
And Mr. LaBelle, that makes absolute sense to me because, as I mentioned earlier in some other shows, a lot of people don't realize that this guy was the number one tight end when he was out at Stanford, and it wasn't until he actually got hurt that Zach Ertz actually, you know, jumped ahead of him and became the number one guy, and I think he went first round or was a first round draft pick when he came out. So he obviously has the talent. It's just seemingly between the ears right now. So I definitely agree with that point.
Well, not only do I about 100% agree with that, Harper, I think when they named me the new Atlanta Falcons head coach, I just found my tight ends and offensive line coach.
Well, we got a little work with X's and O's before that. I've been out of that so long. I would love to coach. I really do. But there's so many hours that go into it. If there was a way that the coaching staff could get their job done in 3 hours instead of eight, then, well, maybe that's the big thing. Because a lot of times you just meet to have a meeting. That's it. Just and get rid of that. Help the guys get home on a decent, you know, at a decent hour. Then, man, I'm all in. But, boy, they burn the candle long. Allow me to tell you my Joe Gibbs story someday, and we'll have fun with that just a little bit.
Well, I would like to say that I actually took the time to calculate my hours, and I put in one time, or we put in as a staff, 120 hours for a 2-hour game. So
wow.
I think what people fail to realize is that as coaches, our day doesn't begin until the players' day ends. So after the meetings are over at 7, 8 o'clock at night, then our day begins getting prepared for practice for the next day. So it's long. I mean, we're talking easily 12, 14-hour days, easily.
Wow. And here I was complaining about the hours I put in writing code. Talk to you guys.
Yeah, that writing code is easy compared to breaking down your next opponent and making sure that you've seen every single snap and you can answer every question that the head coach is going to ask, and whether you're at a high school and the principal is going to come in and sit down with you and say, so what do you think you're going to do this? What's the game plan this week? And answering questions with the press, and then
I was just
get your players motivated. And go ahead. I interrupt you. Go ahead.
No. I was just gonna say the media pressure alone would have done it for me. I mean, I don't have to answer to the media if I write the wrong code. But you know, I mean, I can imagine you guys getting lambasted for dropping a pass or making a wrong read or whatever the case is. So there's definitely a lot of psychology behind it that I wouldn't be. I like being the armchair quarterback and coach here. That's a little bit better for me.
You know, I'll bring up the viral information age that we live in right now. You're going to see more coach speak than ever. And what I mean by that is a coach is only going to say they're a very good team and they're well coached, they're prepared, they've got great athletes, and you're not going to get a whole lot more out of that, because if you give your real opinion, hey, I think we got a chance to kick their tails today, and that goes viral and gets in somebody's locker room, it can only be something that would be deemed negative. And coaches are getting savvy to this, and you see it in the college ranks all the time, and you almost have to beg a guy like Belichick or Nick Saban or some of your traditional coaches that don't say a lot anyways to even get through just a normal press conference. It really has changed, and I don't think it's for the better, to be quite honest with you, because I would really like to hear, hey, my quarterback had a great week of practice. I want to know that. I'm interested, but because of the ability to have that affect you in a negative way if it gets in the other team's locker room or if it gets in the press and it goes to a newspaper in your other team's city, you're going to see a lot less coach speak.
Oh, I agree with you, Mr. DeBell. If you don't mind me adding, Jeremy, I had a situation once where I was on a team and our offense was basically trying to get in sync, and the reporter there asked me, well, with the defense playing so well, Coach, what do you think it needs to happen with the offense? I said, well, if this was checkers or chess and we were playing for that type of championship, I could answer that question. But as a team, we really lose together. So basically what I'm trying to say is that the reporter was trying to get me to say something to slight our offense. So So you have to be, you know, very quick on your feet. But I had a great, you know, media relations person, and he always prepared us for those type of questions. I mean, believe it or not, there's a meeting even with those individuals to make sure that you're informed what you say to the media.
And we are on with Harper LaBelle, former Falcon, 929 weekend guy and GSU commentator. You know, with the Falcons heading up to Carolina this weekend, what do you see out of this Carolina team that either the Falcons can exploit, or that they the tough thing they're going to have to deal with?
Well, let's start with the tough thing. I think initially their defense, which was really so good last year, could be good on Sunday. They generally play pretty well at home. They play pretty tight to the vest, if I remember correctly, and that's just not throughout the season with the Panthers, but historically against the Falcons. They always play them pretty well. I still remember our very first game of the 95 season, and the first game Carolina ever played was in the Georgia Dome, and it went to overtime. And then we played them at Clemson, but we opened the season next year in their brand-new stadium. And I'm going to tell you right now, that was a real tough place to play because they believed in themselves as a team, and then the fans got behind them, and it's not easy. So defensively, they are tough, so that puts a little pressure and onus on Matt Ryan. It puts it on the wide receivers, especially if Harry comes back. And I know we're talking about Devin Hester's injury, and, you know, the depth issue might be something that comes into play at wide receiver this week. But we ran the ball well against Tampa. And if that continues, boy, I think that's going to open up some great things. We didn't have a 300 or 400 day by Matt Ryan, but I don't care. We won against Tampa. And that's the most important thing to me. And statistically, yeah, okay, Tampa even outgained us. They threw more and they gained more on the ground, but we won the game. So ultimately, offensively, I don't care if we get 400, 500, 600 yards. I just want to be able to have more points on the board at the end of the ball game.
Yeah, I agree with that. At the end of the day, even a lot of the great players will tell you too, but a lot of the even, you know, 53rd guys on rosters, they're like, "Hey, I don't care what my stat line says per se. I just care that we got the W in the column and that we're winning games and we're progressing as a team."
Absolutely. And I, like I said, I'll be on site for that game as well as Jeremy, just so you know, I'll actually be in Green Bay in Lambeau Field for that Monday night game. It is confirmed now, so I'll get to see 6 of the last 8 games in person. But I'm like you, you guys, I just want to see them build on last week. And I think this game is so pivotal. And again, watching their mindset and the way they moved about and some of the things they were speaking about, you can start to see the excitement start to build up again. Because they're starting to taste blood in the water, especially with New Orleans losing that game to San Francisco. They know that if they win this game, that they're in tie for first place in the NFC South. And I just really want to see that first quarter against Detroit Lions team, or that team that played New Orleans the first game. I want to see that team show up again. And if that happens, I think you're going to see something dynamic. I'm going to put it out there now.
Well, I'll also say, too, that Atlanta, you know, they're ready. I've always said that they had a great personnel over there. They're ready. I think what I saw in this game against Tampa was trust. They finally played a cover two that they trusted, and that's what happened at the end of the game. The play that Alfred made was a play of he went up and he just decided this is not going to happen on this play. And I saw a great cover two play. So now I think with the defense is what I'm saying, more especially with the secondary, is that they're starting to trust each other now. Nobody's out of position. They're trusting that you're going to do your job, and everybody was in place. And so now rolling into Carolina, you're going to see the same thing. If they can contain Cam Newton and not let him get outside, really bring a rush up the middle hard, contain the outside, and force him to make those tough throws, I think – you're going to see a lot of the same what you saw in this Tampa game with Carolina.
Well, you know what, to that point, Coach, I beat him up so bad during the year. I've really got to get, and I said I would do this on the show, I really have to give some kudos to Steven Jackson. I think he had the best game of the time that he's been here in Atlanta. He set the tone with the first run, with the 7-yard rush, and he really showed a lot of physicality. And that just seemed to be the tone of the team in general. They were flying all over the place. I mean, we got more pressure on the quarterback than we've gotten all year, maybe in the last 2 years. So I really wanted to send that shout out to Steven Jackson because he really, I think, set the tone for the team this week.
And we are talking with former Atlanta Falcon Harper LaBelle. Harper, it's a new segment we've kind of started, or that we're starting this week. It's called the Impact Player of the Week, and it could be for any particular reason. But if you were to kind of hand out the Impact Player of the Week for whatever reason for the Atlanta Falcons for last week's game, who really stands out in your mind?
Well, thanks for giving me time to prep for that, especially if it's a brand new segment.
Welcome to our world,
Harper. Yeah, no. First thing that came to my mind when you said that is, especially because we're talking defense right now, is OC. Two sacks and kind of turned the switch on. And it, when you have to account for him, it opens up holes with other portions of the offensive line not able to block everybody. And even Corey Bierman got a sack late in the game. And when you can put pressure on the quarterback, and you guys talked about this just a moment ago, and you can play cover two because you know that there's not nearly as much time that the quarterback's going to have to throw the ball and complete that pass, you play at a completely different level. Your psyche's different. Your quote, I'm putting air quotes out there, not on my watch, especially on a defense. That's in the back of your head, and so that to me, defensively, and you're right, Steven had a great running game, one we haven't seen. I want to see those dreads flying horizontal, and it's always good when that happens because that means he's gaining some big chunks of yards. So I'll give one impact player on each side of the ball.
All right, Coach, who would you pick?
I agree. I would like to say that Mr. Jackson had a very good game as far as the defense is concerned. I'm going to say the defense in its entirety. I think that there were plays in the game where they missed some opportunities, but when the time came, again, they got the pressure, they got the sacks, and at the end, Alfred made the play that was necessary to make sure that they could secure the win.
Okay, Reggie, who do you got?
On the offensive side, I think it's going to come down to Matt Ryan. I think how he manages the game, I mean, I think they're actually able to move the ball a lot better than they have, and they haven't really had a problem moving the ball, but it's getting into the red zone, and like Roddy White mentioned, getting more touchdowns than you get field goals. Having been in Carolina, that crowd can get very hostile when they're winning, and they can get very quiet when they're losing, so I like to see them jump on Carolina a little bit faster and put touchdowns on the board instead of field goals. On the defensive side, I'm actually going to say Lowry. And I bring up Lowry because, you know, that safety position being able to – that strong safety position being able to help these guys, those linebackers, kind of maintain and manage and keep Cam Newton contained. They don't have very much of a run game, fortunately, but they do have some receivers, namely Mr. Kelvin Benjamin, that's going to need some help over the top, regardless of whether Offert's on him or Trufant's on him. So I think he's going to definitely be that guy that, you know, if they can't get the pressure on Cam Newton, somebody's going to have to make sure that guy's covered at all times.
Well, I'm gonna give my Impact Player of the Week award to Croy Bierman, and I know I've been on him about his lackluster play, at least in my opinion. I believe he's starting to feel comfortable coming off that Achilles injury, and Croy, I hope you're listening for one. I still want to put the pressure on you to keep performing at this level, but for sure, I liked, even from, it was one of the opening plays where he batted the ball up in the air and almost had an interception, like the third McCown pass there was. And I guess not really even an honorable mention, but I just want to, I guess, give a gold star, as we used to get back in elementary school. I want to give the gold star to Tyler Starr, who I don't know if you guys made it. He actually made a play during the game. Did you guys see this?
Yeah, I did actually see that impact. Yeah, he needs to get a little bit more time, it looks like.
Yeah, Devin Hester was running out of bounds. He got forced out of bounds and was about to fall down, and Tyler Starr got up, dropped his Gatorade, and made sure Devin Hester stayed upright. So I just want to commend the effort to Tyler Starr. He got FaceTime and he got to make a play in the game. If Mike Smith doesn't want to dress him, that's on him, but I'm glad he made a play.
And you know what, Jeremy, to that point, I want to throw one other player in there, and that's Marcus Trufant, because Vincent Jackson is not an easy receiver to cover. And I know Mike Evans kind of went off a little bit, but I think Trufant has shown himself to be that cover corner that Atlanta's been waiting for quite some time.
Definitely so. And, Harper, we made our picks of this week. I'll get your take real quick. Do you got the Falcons or the Panthers?
Well, for all the reasons that we've already gone over, I think the rest of the season is one continual playoff game after another. And I think it's elimination or you know, get ready to play at the next game. That's your choice. You're either going to get eliminated and go home and play golf, or even though you got 6, 7, maybe 5 games left in the season, depending on when it happens. But that type of, I'm not going to call it pressure, but that type of expectancy that you put on yourself, I think will pay off this weekend. I really, it was nice to hear Coach's impression of meeting with the guys earlier in the week, and they know, they're aware, but there's that little blood in the water. They're approaching the rest of this season, as long as they've got a chance, in a completely different manner. And so I'm going to ride on the momentum and say that they're going in the right direction. I don't believe Carolina is right at the moment, so I think they'll take advantage of it.
Yeah, we all went Falcons as well. We're going to try to get the soundboard guy to get us a if the patriarch of the Simpsons family can say his first name and say Homer every time we agree. That's definitely our Homer pick this week.
Yeah, not too hard. Hard to pick them this week. I know there have been a few weeks in the past where I've had to quietly, as a former Falcon, go, I'm not so sure about that. When you think of Baltimore, for example, I didn't think we were going to play well up there. We didn't. And not that I'm right, I'm not a Vegas guy, but sometimes your intuition means a lot. And I think that this weekend, I think it's for all of us, we're all pointing in the right direction. That seems to be the way it's going to go.
Well, you are a former Raven, so I mean, I could understand you being on the fence on that game. So I'll let that one go.
There you go. Yeah. It had to be a good reason for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we will never fault you because, trust me, our picks are all over the board a lot of weeks, too. But
speak for yourself, Jeremy.
I was speaking for myself.
Yeah, Reggie, I think you're leading the league right now, aren't you?
Yeah, I had to tank a couple of games to give them their self-esteem back. He spoke a little bit earlier about sometimes when you're losing so much, you just can't get it together, so I had to take one for the team.
Reggie, I would just you might want to not get too comfortable in the tailgating pocket because linebacker of the impact here might be looking for you.
Yeah.
But that's actually going to do it for us for Falcons On this week. Harper, we appreciate you coming on. We love having you on, and I'm glad we got to get into some Georgia State stuff as well.
Thank you. I appreciate you asking, and look forward to it anytime you need me.
Definitely so. We'll definitely have you on here in a couple weeks, and hopefully to talk about some Georgia State victories and the Falcons in first place.
We get to that point, and I'll be your guest anytime. That's a positive direction for both sites there with UGA and – I'm sorry, not UGA, but with the Falcons and Georgia State. Absolutely.
Like I said, we appreciate you being on, and I am your host, Jeremy the Impact York. Appreciate Coach being on, and also Reggie, you as well. Any parting words for our fans?
Hey, fans, I need a name. I'm tired of being Mr. Reggie Walker. So tweet me what my name should be, and be nice.
How about Reggie Walking Dead Walker?
No, I hate it.
Tell you what, fans, make sure to tweet in your Reggie nicknames for us. And Harper, even if you have one, drop us a line there, and maybe we'll put up a poll to pick the best one.
Sounds good. Absolutely.
We'll see you guys next week, and go Falcons.